This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I'm actually getting going home a little later than usual. Had a little excitement today. We're getting ready to start expanding our beta test on our first big paperless project, and we needed a new demo done because we had added so much stuff. So I was going to do that this afternoon, kind of had a little script put together and knew what I was going to do, and I was doing just running through my demo, making sure everything was working, and lo and behold, I wasn't getting any emails from the development box. And we have multiple development boxes, so we checked some of the other ones, and lo and behold, we weren't getting emails from any of them. Turns out that apparently our email server that we were using for all of those boxes was decommissioned. So that's why it wasn't working. That threw me late, but I decided, you know what, we're going to take a run at this. So about 4:15, I sat down with everything, set everything up, and just started talking. I think I got through it. I talked for, half an hour or so. I think I got through it and demonstrated everything that needed to be demonstrated. We'll do a more polished one later, and we'll get it all under control. This one is just a little bit better than the last one with the new stuff we've put in because we're getting ready to expand voluntarily to more people. And so we just needed something that went through all the stuff quickly, but that threw me a little late. So I'm just getting away from my dad's now. I've been trying to go by and see him whenever no one has been by to see him during the day. Just to say hello, have a little visit, see how he's doing, et cetera, et cetera. He seems to be doing fine. So we're puttering along there. I do not have book 7 done yet. Theoretically, it would be great if I was finished with book 7 this weekend, but I think I have a few too many things to write. Now, technically, I'm not supposed to be finished with book 7 until Roughton, until September 1st. But it would be really good if I could get done a little early because I'm going on vacation and I need to get my beta copies together, yada, 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 yada. But we'll see. And as always, I'm at this point going, yeah, I sure wish I knew what was going on. The last book, I actually was kind of locked in. By this point, I knew what I had to do, and I just wrote it out. This one, there's still a bunch of little things up in the air. Excuse me. And it was interesting because on book 6, I knew what I wanted to do in the epilogue, but it was a hard write. I mean, I got into it and then realized I needed more perspectives, and you know, I ground it and ground it and eventually got it to settle in, and it was good. This one, I'm not even exactly sure where this thing is going to land. But you know what? It's okay. Step at a time. That's really one of the big points of doing this in the first place. It is that process of being in the fog, of being unsettled, of being unresolved, and just walking out. And so I'm firmly convinced I will walk out of this, and I will walk out at some point, hopefully, over the next week and a half. But while I am right here, right now, I just have to smile and just keep putting one foot in front of the other. So it's fascinating. I'm not out of the woods. I'm not out of the fog yet. But I will be. By God's grace and help, I will be. And this book is completely different than I thought it was going to be. Well, not completely different. I had a few little images in my head about what this book would be, but it has significantly changed. So I'm looking forward to going back and actually reading through it all, because it'll be interesting to see if it is what I think it is. And then it'll be interesting to get the cover put together, because there's work to do on the cover, and I sort of know what it's supposed to look like. So it's fun. It's fun. It is a challenge. It is reaching, you know, pushing myself. But that's okay. That's all right. That makes life exciting. Okay, anyways, so that's all going fine. Work is going fine. We're just trying to keep all the balls in the air and moving forward. And when there's a problem, trying to figure out what's going on.
It's funny because
K2, of course, is a new technology for us. And it gets a bum rap sometimes, because when something goes wrong, the first inclination is, well, something's wrong with K2. But every time so far, we've discovered, no, it wasn't K2. It was something we did. So even still, you know, when it's not working, it's like, ah. But we're moving forward with that too. And that's all good. We did go see the eclipse this week. That was fun. That was lots and lots of fun. And one of the things that was very fun about the whole thing was not only seeing the eclipse, but it was encouraging people to see the eclipse who actually went to see the eclipse and then told me later how much they enjoyed it. So I had three different buddies who didn't even have eclipse glasses as of Wednesday. And I said, well, I've got some eclipse glasses at home. I'll bring you some. And we got to talking about the eclipse, and they were like, well, it'll be 97% here. And I kept telling them, no, no, no. The eclipse is the bomb. It is the thing. Totality. You've got to get to totality. And it was fun, because I got back in on Tuesday after we had seen the eclipse on Monday, obviously, and started talking to some friends and saying, so, how was your eclipse? Oh, man, it was great. We went up to so-and-so. Oh, you got in totality. Yeah, it was great. Yay! Yay. Had a friend that went up to Perryville, Missouri. Had clear skies up there. That was cool. I had two other friends who went up to Sullivan, to Merrimack State Park. They were braver than I, because they went up Interstate 44. I would have never done that because of the crowds, but they said the crowds wasn't too bad going up. Coming back, they said it was a little tough. But where they went was just like 2.5 hours, and they were out in the country, and so there wasn't as much interference through the lights. We headed up to Sedalia. It really looked like for a few minutes there that we were going to Cape Girardeau. I was investigating an Airbnb house up there for us to rent, and we were on the way. We were in conversation, and thankfully it was Sunday, and so both of us, the renter and the rentee, had to go to church. I went to church. I was watching the weather. The weather started turning in Cape Girardeau while we were in church. And then the lady who was renting the house wrote me, and she said, we've heard from the other ones and they want to rent. And so I wrote her back. I said, that's fine. I said, it looks like the weather may be turning. And so then we just decided, because it looked like clouds everywhere, we just decided, you know what, if it's just going to be cloudy, we're going to go someplace close, and that was Sedalia. So we went up to Sedalia, camped out at a church up there, really nice pastor. Alan knew him, my son-in-law knew him, and it actually, the skies lightened up enough. We just had some high cirrus clouds. The skies lightened up enough that we got a good view of totality, a good view of the corona. It was just a little blurry because it was coming through those clouds, but it was a good experience. And in fact, I think I'll probably go ahead and tack on. I took the recorder with me, and I started it up about 3 minutes beforehand, but I'll splice into the end of this. We don't normally do edits on the podcast, but I'll splice into the a minute before and then through totality on the end of this. It's just a, what do they call those on the DVDs? Additional feature? No, it's additional content. I can't remember what it's called. My brain's a little tired right now. Anyways, for today on the podcast, so let me just finish up with the eclipse stuff. The eclipse is going to be back in 2024. It is going to be back. It's only 7 years. If you didn't go see this eclipse, start making plans to go see the next one, because I pretty much can guarantee you, I think I can say I will guarantee you that if you saw the last eclipse, you are already making plans for the next one. Because it's fun. It is really fun. And this one is going to be darker because the moon is going to be at minimum and it's going to last longer. So whereas where we were, this one was only a minute 30. Where my friends were, it was only 2 minutes and 40. This one is going to be 4 minutes, 4.5 minutes. It's going to be cool. Going to be cool. April the 8th, 2024. Make plans. Put it on your calendar. Believe me, it's not that far away. Anyways, I was watching some things and I came across a TED Talk that was on storytelling. And this was fun. It was very, very fun. This guy is a consultant. And he trains trainers and he trains people in business how to be better at communication. He trains them in how to do functional storytelling and how to invoke certain emotions and certain hormones in a room so that you can all get on the same wavelength and you can have a better meeting. So it was fun. It's a fun talk, but he was talking about storytelling, and obviously I love storytelling. And he started off his talk revisiting a story about how in 2009, a man, a journalist by the name of Rob Walker, wanted to find out how powerful storytelling was as a tool. So he went on his computer and he bought 200 objects from eBay. Said the average price of the items was $1. And then he called up 200 authors and he asked them, would you like to be part of a significant objects study? And would you like to write a story about one of these objects? He got all of these 200 authors to say, yeah, we'll do it. So he had 200 objects. He sent them to them. They wrote 200 stories. And then when he got them all back in, he turned around and he listed the objects back on eBay again, except this time it wasn't just the object, it was the object with a story. He bought those 200 objects for a total of $129. And if I remember correctly, he ended up selling them for $6,000 or $8,000. That is the power of story. It's an incredible tool. And he said stories have this amazing ability to motivate us. He said, for instance, you go see a James Bond movie, and James Bond is the most interesting man in the world. He didn't say that. I said that. And you see that James Bond is wearing this Omega watch, and you walk out of this movie and you think, you know, if I had an Omega watch, I would be more like James Bond. And so you actually go out, some people do, I don't, some people go out and they buy an Omega watch, $10,000. And when they put it on their wrist, they feel more like James Bond. He said that there's been a study that says that $10.5 billion is generated in product placement review every single year. So just just because, as part of a story, a product is featured, that product will sell more. And movies make money off of this. They don't make their money solely, but they do make money off of this. Spurlock. Spurlock. What is the guy's first name? I can't remember. He did this TED Talk called The Greatest TED Talk Ever Sold. And he might have done a movie on it, too. It was interesting. The movie was on selling the TED Talk. So he went away around to all these sponsors, and he gathered sponsors. He was going to do this TED Talk on the movie. And it was very interesting. You should look it up. Anyways, the guy who was giving this talk on storytelling was talking about how stories invoke certain emotions in us, and how that as you're giving a talk, as you're communicating, you can evoke emotions. One of the things that tickles me a little bit about my books is that the epilogues are always designed to evoke emotions. And I always like to evoke noble emotions. You know, you can evoke emotions using just plain loss. But you can also invoke emotions, as we've talked about here many times, using things like sacrifice and reunion and transcendence and validation, all those wonderful, noble emotions. And those are the ones that I like to use to evoke emotion. And what's funny about that is that I have some beta readers that they don't like the fact that I can evoke emotion in them consistently. In fact, my own daughter has told me that sometimes she'll read my books as part of the beta reader. And there, well, one time in particular, I know, she said she got to the epilogue and she just took the book and set it down. She just didn't want to deal with it. She didn't want to cry. She just set the book down. And she left it sit there for like 2 months. And then it got to be time for the deadline, and so she just begrudgingly picked up the book, read the epilogue, and cried. But the young lady who lives with us, I think I've mentioned this before on the podcast, the young lady who lives with us, she said when she was working on this last book, book 6, she said, I already told myself, I'm not going to cry. I'm not going to cry in the epilogue. I'm not going to cry. And she said, then I read the epilogue, and I cried. Because there are certain deep themes in our lives. And when you hit those themes, it opens up something within us. And this is basically what this guy was talking about in functional storytelling. What was interesting is that he approached it from a hormonal standpoint. One moment, I'm getting my mail. Because he was talking about the different emotions that he wanted to evoke, and he was talking about the different types of things that you could do to create those emotions. So he comes at it more from a hormonal perspective and the types of things that you do to evoke those hormones. Whereas I come at it from more of a thematic perspective. So it was fun. But he has this thing that he calls the angel's cocktail. And the angel's cocktail is three different emotions that he's trying to evoke. Well, three different hormones that he's trying to evoke. One moment. We got some people coming in for a party tonight. So I may need to say hello. And we have a cat out here who is waiting. And I may need to go shoo the cat away. So let me go do that real quickly. Looks like someone's coming out to help. One moment, I will be right back, right back, right back. Go, cat, go. Okay, one moment. I need to go make sure they're coming in. Sorry. Okay, anyway, so his angel cocktail is really three different hormones. It's dopamine, it's oxytocin, and it's endorphins. And so he talked, and I've got to wrap this up, so you can watch the TED Talk, but he talks about how dopamine, cliffhangers, exciting stories, stories that generate your interest, those create dopamine. You know, so he talked about a little thing, which a problem that he had gotten into, and it got right up to the point where he was going into a meeting and people were going to try to shoot him down, and then he just quit and walked away from that story. And he said, I'm not going to tell you, he said, but what you're feeling right now, that interest that you have in that story, that's dopamine, and that drives you forward. And I do a lot of cliffhanger-ish type stuff in my writing where I'll jump over to a little story, you know, kind of develop a little more, and then I'll leave it as a spot where there's a point of interest, jump over to another story, and I just keep ricocheting back and forth. And that creates dopamine response in people. In fact, I did one book five, that was more linear. A lot of people just didn't like it because we stuck on one story for too long. And so there wasn't the same kind of dopamine resonance and response that there is when you bounce back and forth. Anyways, the second one, oxytocin, is really about evoking empathy. He told a very touching story about his child being stillborn. And, you know, you get that bonding emotion, that empathetic emotion. And he talks about the fact that, you know, you have to share a vulnerable story about yourself. And if you do that, then in your meetings that you have, people will be more connected. And when they're more connected, then they'll work together better. And then endorphins is really just about sharing funny stories. He said, now, as opposed to that angel cocktail, a lot of meetings actually end up with a devil's cocktail. And the devil's cocktail, just a second, the devil's cocktail is cortisol, which is a stress hormone. You know, if people coming into a meeting and they don't want to be there and someone has just chewed them out and blah, 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 blah. Devil's cocktail, high levels of cortisol and adrenaline. So people are feeling stressed out. They're feeling like they've got so much to do and they don't have time to be in this meeting. And rah, 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 rah. And while I don't specifically do the types of things he's talking about, I personally, I'm always trying to be aware in the meeting how we're doing, whether we've been going so long that people are starting to fall asleep and so we need to tell a funny story, or whether there's some anxiousness about a deployment and people need reassurance and, you know, they need to be told that we're going to do this together one step at a time and we've got backup plans and it's going to be great. I think he's really on to something here, to be very aware of what's going on in the emotional atmosphere of the room and be able to respond to that and know how to move forward and make that work. And so a lot of interesting things he had to say. He did also make an interesting observation right at the end. Let me see if I can find it real quick because it was fun. So from an evolutionary standpoint, it's, you know, he said, my point is this. 100,000 years ago, we started developing our language, and it's sound to say that we started using storytelling to transfer knowledge from generation to generation. So 27,000 years ago, we started transferring knowledge from generation to generation through cave paintings. 3,500 years ago, we started transferring knowledge from generation to generation through text. Said 28 years ago, PowerPoint was born. Which one do you think our brain is mostly adapted to? Because he doesn't like PowerPoint. He'd rather stand up there and tell stories and guide the meetings through that, which is an interesting viewpoint. And I do use PowerPoint for some things in my meetings when we need to get through a lot of information fast, but I'm constantly in the meetings mixing them with stories, mixing them with jokes, lightening the mood, smiling a lot. Because it is true that if you can invoke dopamine, if you can invoke oxytocin, if you can invoke endorphins, your meetings are going to go a whole lot better. So I am going to sign off. And then this will be the end of the podcast. And then I'm going to tack on the little 1.5 minutes, 2 minutes of the eclipse. And it's just us reacting to the eclipse. And I just want to do that for posterity so that grandkids, when they grow up, they'll be able to listen and go, hey, that was me. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.
All right, we're 1 minute away.
Oh.
we gotta get pictures.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if it'll. I don't know. Okay. Beautiful. I don't know if I can get a photo. It's not working.
Oh,
yeah, it's
goodness.
Too dark.
Oh, I can't do it.
It's too dark.
I can.
Will
you
do it?
That is gorgeous. Oh. The color, the pink.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous. You can see on the horizon. It looks like sunset all around the horizon.
They said there'd be some planet that's real predominant.
Right here?
Right there?
Yeah, that's a planet from up there. That's crazy.
Wow.
It is. It's absolutely gorgeous.
It's like something you see on a sci-fi movie.
Yeah.
Doesn't it?
Oh, coming up.
So are the Earth and the Moon.
How much longer?
Here he comes.
Okay. It's almost
diamond
over.
Ready.
All right, you got to put your glasses back on.
There
you
go.
Put your glasses back on.